introverted noise.
Hurry up, Daddy.
Let's do it.
5 seconds to go in the first half. Dante fires deep to the left. Moss caught it at the 11, but now he puts
look at this!
To Mo Williams! Touchdown!
You gotta be kidding me!
All right, well, welcome back to another episode of the Climbing the Pocket Protectors podcast. I don't know. It's Climbing the Pocket. It's Pocket Protectors. I'm your host, Jason Brown. You can find me on Twitter at BrownJason. And I'm here with a mixed crew, in figuratively and literally, I guess. Got the good doctor, got Luke, and I got Saxy Prince here. And we're going to talk some football. We got... really don't have show notes. We were just kind of talking offline and decided we were going to hop on for a little bit here. At halftime to get some of these takes recorded, because, you know, the fan base seems to be in a strange spot following this, this loss to the
Saints.
Listen,
if you would have listened to us, you would be in an expected spot. But since you didn't listen to us,
that's
you're in an unexpected spot.
That's enough out of you.
And that is your fault.
Yeah, with that said, though, Eric. How you doing? How you been? Because I know I did check out Green Line beforehand, and it did say that my score prediction for the Vikings game was wrong, because you did have the Saints winning a close one there. Outside of, you know, picking that game correctly, what else you been up to, man?
Man, we had a good week for Green Line. The one that really hurt was San Francisco. We had them, and they had like an 18-3 lead or something like that, and lost it to Josh Rosen. But other than that, The first half under in this Monday night game hit, so I think that's some goodness there. But I don't know, man. It's been an interesting NFL season, right? I think the Vikings have been they've been kind of everything we thought they were going to be. I think the last time we had the podcast was right before the Bills game, and we all overlooked the Bills. And since then, they've kind of – I don't know – you look at the Eagles win, doesn't look as impressive anymore. Obviously the Rams and now the Saints. If you're a Vikings fan, you really have a lot of uncertainty moving forward here.
Yeah. You did tell us to bet the under. I did. You did tell us to bet the under, and it does seem to be trending in that way. Luke, what's going on, man? Packing stuff up, putting out great content, bringing the fan base together with Thielen montages. What else you been up to, dude?
Yeah, I've been doing a little bit more kind of film stuff this year, just because I kind of made like a resolution to try to learn more about it. But you know, my home is still in the number. Right. But yeah, still writing every week for Purple PTSD. Still doing the Purple Journal. We've been giving away gnomes left and right. Listen to that show if you want to get in the raffle.
I did not win the gnome. No gnomes for me. And Saxy Prince is in between Uber rides right now. How you doing, man?
Listen, I drive a 2007 Prius, so you know I got to get as much work out of this as possible.
You are a hardworking man there, Saxy Prince.
You break all the fake millennial stereotypes.
Well, all right, guys. Let's get to this thing here. Let's talk about it. And Luke, I actually want to start with you because you had a take. We were joking around, but it's still also kind of a real take as well. And it was name a more iconic duo, 350 yards passing and losses. But,
I was super worried that you were about to throw out one of the takes that I've dropped in the DMs that's not ready for public consumption.
I would never.
That's a sacred place.
This is one of those places where, you know, Kirk Cousins, when you look at the box score here, 350 yards passing, 8.76 yards per attempt, his adjusted yards per attempt over 8.6, passer rating 107.7. But the Vikings come out of this game with the L. From your perspective, having watched the game, I imagine probably at least twice now, what was your thoughts? What were your feelings about how Kirk Cousins played in this game? And is it strange to you at all that in this game that on paper looks to be one of Kirk's better games out of the last, you know, three, it came down as a game that the Vikings were not able to win.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely don't think this was like even a top half game of his season, right? Like, he was way better against the Rams. He was way better in, like, the Packers game, in Lambeau and stuff. But, like, and I think if, you know, if you're the reason I tweeted that is because, like, quarterbacks racking up a whole bunch of stats because they're in shootouts because they're behind, like, happens all the time. And then, you know, people, like, I think I say this all the time that, like, box score scouts must be constantly confused about, like, quarterbacks racking up 350-plus, but, like, how did their team still lose? What? If I had football, makes no sense to me. Like, I always just imagine, like, some meathead sitting there looking at ESPN box scores and just, like, drooling on themselves. But... but I think, like, with Cousins, he definitely, like, has been the same guy all season. He's been forcing all these throws. Like, I can't wait to see his, like, turnover worthy plays at the end of the year in the QB annual, if that's going to come out again. Because I think he just, like, he always forces these tight window throws. And, like, sometimes it turns into that, like, crazy Adam Thielen catch in Lambeau in week two. And sometimes it turns into, you know, a tight window throw that gets tipped up and intercepted. Or, you know, I kind of think that somewhat led to the pick six for PJ Williams, although that was kind of pretty clearly more Diggs's fault. And then his ball security issues are, like, still a thing and always have been a thing and always will be a thing. Like, if you're surprised that, like, wow, he's fumbling so much, oh my God, like, you shouldn't be shocked by that at all. If you're surprised by that, you should look at how you evaluated this.
Well, yeah, you just probably never watched him play before he started playing for the Vikings, if that's something you're surprised about, because, I mean, it's an ongoing thing. And I guess, Eric, from your perspective, what are your thoughts on this game in particular, how Kirk Cousins played? And I guess, how are you feeling about the team, generally speaking, kind of where we are now at this point in the season?
Yeah, the weird thing about Kirk is that, you know, in terms of negatively graded plays, he's actually not generating that many. They just all happen to be bad, like really bad. So from the perspective of like a play for play basis, like Mitch Trubisky throws like really bad, like bad passes consistently. Kirk Cousins throws bad passes about half as much, but all of those bad passes, it seems, are turnover worthy. So that's really like strange. I think that a lot will regress. On the other hand, he's facing a lot of pressure. And his passing, like at halftime of yesterday's game, he was 7 for 7 for 115 yards when pressured. And I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that he can just put it in the general direction of Stephon Diggs and Adam Thielen, and he's going to see a good outcome. And I wonder like how much of that is going to continue, because obviously like supporting cast regress more than quarterback play. And so I don't know. So when I think about yesterday's game, I think it's a game that the Vikings are really going to look back on and ask themselves, like, how did we let this slip through our fingers? I think that game, the Vikings controlled for the first part of the game. They held the Saints to 3 drives in the first half that didn't result in touchdowns, maybe 4. I can't remember. I think it was more like 3, but like their defense played the part, even with all those guys out. And I think they're really going to regret having not played a great game and having won. But moving forward, I think if you take the Saints and the Rams out of the equation, the Vikings very well could be the 3 seed in the NFC. And I don't think it's going to be that difficult. Green Bay looks profoundly beatable. Detroit and Chicago are kind of Detroit and Chicago. So I do think that they can win the division. And in the playoffs, like if Kirk Cousins can avoid the mistakes, I think that they can hang with anybody. So if you're a Vikings fan, you should be optimistic, but you should also not be surprised the player Kirk Cousins has ended up being.
I did not expect to hear breadstick slander from you.
Boo.
The breadsticks are the fact that the breadsticks are in first place in the NFC East is the best.
Yeah, the NFC East is awful. But Saxy Prince, were you able to get that second watch in of the game today? Because I know you were going to try to take another look at it.
You know, I was going to try to sneak it in, but I wasn't able to get there. But it was really nice actually being at the game, because I feel like you get to see the field in which, you know, when you're obviously having the plays and stuff, you don't get to see all the little, I guess I would call them inconsistencies that you see. Like when you see, like when something bad is going to happen, you can see it way more. It's way more evident when you're like actually at the game. You're like, oh, this is going to happen. It's going to, oh, yep, it's happening now. Whereas like when you're watching it on TV, I feel like you're just so far removed away from it that you maybe don't see it until like, you know, Cameron Jordan is right at his hip, and then, you know, something bad happens.
Yeah. So with that said, in the third quarter, like before the pick six, and I know I mentioned it to everyone that's on right now, is that when I was watching the game again, and I guess maybe I was just caught up in it, and probably because it was a night game and I was drinking, but I didn't really remember right away that, you know, Kirk Cousins seemed intent on giving that game away really through that whole sequence leading up to the pick six. Like, he just seemed to be going too fast or something, like for that whole sequence where he had a play where he threw it right to a linebacker who dropped it, and then he had that weird scramble, almost fumble, where he just should have thrown the ball away that almost resulted in a turnover. And then he threw that kind of that blind pass to where he thought Stephon Diggs was going to be. But, you know, I've seen other people kind of talk about it, and I don't know that they're necessarily wrong, that had Stephon Diggs kept running, that might have just been a pick instead of a pick six. But he didn't know, like, he didn't know who he was throwing that ball to. Like, it just seemed like for that whole sequence, he was out of sorts and something bad was going to happen. From watching it live, I guess, is that something that you were able to get a sense of there, or was just like, you know, what is happening? What is he doing? What were people around you saying during all of that, where he was just trying to give the ball away?
Yeah, I mean, I was fortunate enough to sit next to Kuma, and he was kind of calling like things out and what the Vikings should be doing and whatnot. And yeah, even on that pick six play, I didn't see Diggs stop live. I thought it was just like a bad Kirk Cousins play, but you know, I did see the clip again, and it's like, I did see Kirk throw the ball, and I'm just like, I don't think that should have been the receiver he should have been thrown to. So even if Diggs did stop, that's obviously a miscommunication. I think that's a miscommunication on both of them. But even so, it didn't really look like that was a play that Kirk should have thrown. I felt like he should have even thrown it away, or maybe I can't even remember, either like scrambled out or tried to do something different than, you know, throwing it like that. But yeah, there were a number of plays where it's just like, I think Austin Blyle, I think is how you pronounce it, he put it the best way today. He said something along the lines, it's like Kirk Cousins is like a Mac, right? When he's running smoothly, everything's great, it's fast, all that stuff. It's just that, but like when he starts to, when things start to like malfunction, he just like everything gets shoddy and like, it's just not operating smoothly. And that's like, that's really Kirk Cousins. It's when his technique is just off, his timing, his rhythm is off. And, you know, that article that I put on Daily Norseman last week kind of talked about this, is like, you just feel as if when he's off rhythm, like he's not going to be the quarterback that we need him to be at the level he should be playing at. And it, like, one suggestion I have is like, Kirk is going to need to spend like the entire offseason just like playing off rhythm so that he can just like really get it ingrained into his system. Cause I feel like he's maximized the, you know, the amount of talent that he can have playing on rhythm. Now it's at the point where it's just like, he's so good at that, but he's not good at the other stuff, which I think is just as important with the improvisation and you know, throwing off rhythm and, you know, having little hitches when you know that the blitz is coming from a certain place. So
Luke, has AI technology progressed to the point where they can reprogram Cousins to do these sorts of things in an off season?
No, Elon Musk is on it though.
I think they do have like some AI stuff where like a guy can, you know, go through and simulate those situations. The Phil Mackey on the Vikings event line said, yeah, he's the kind of guy who's like, you get the blue screen every once in a while on your laptop, where it's like going smooth and all of a sudden it just like aborts everything, which I think is pretty sage. That I do think what Yink is talking about actually does explain his pressure numbers too, because like it was somewhat similar with Sam Bradford, which Bradford was like second in the NFL in passer rating when pressured in 2016 for the Vikings. It's like when you don't feel pressure, like there's a good side of that often where you just like stand in there and make throws. And you don't get rattled because you don't like know any better. I do think that's somewhat Cousins as well, right? So That's going to be a bad thing when pressure comes at like sort of the wrong time for them, which it does at, on occasion against the Vikings.
Yeah, and that's a great point. And maybe that's part of, you know, the issues that we see with some of the turnovers is, you know, being oblivious to that pressure is part of the reason that he's able to put up those great passing numbers. But being oblivious to that pressure is also why he sometimes doesn't move off of his spot or protect the football or, you know, climb the pocket, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, which leads to, like you said, they don't happen often, but when they do happen, they seem like disastrous plays or disastrous plays in waiting, like that, you know, backwards throwaway pass to Diggs and things like that the week before. So yeah, that is an interesting thing there, but not to rag too much on Kirk Cousins, because I guess, Eric, because you do this for, you know, a living now and you're modeling kind of, you know, performance and all these things. When you look at this game, taking the final score kind of out of it, when you look at how the Vikings were able to play on defense, the amount of yards they were able to gain versus the amount of yards the Saints were able to gain, like going forward, like how does that play out kind of as you're modeling the rest of the season and looking at kind of the strength of the Vikings team as you project them forward?
Yeah, I still think that they are the favorite to win the NFC North. And we're going to run our simulation tonight as soon as the Monday Night Football game's over. But, you know, I still think the most likely outcome for them is 9-6-1. And I think that that will be enough to win the division. I think, you know, they have some tough games coming up ahead against, you know, New England, for example, Green Bay, Seattle. And it looks like they're not going to be the disaster that their Twitter thought that they were going to be. So they're going to have some tough stretches, and I can almost guarantee you they'll lose a game that we thought they were going to win. But Chicago is a team, their defense is good, but defense is a regret. You know, we see with Jacksonville, we see with Minnesota, defense is not something Baltimore, you cannot hang your hat on, right? So Chicago, it's going to come down to Mitch Trubisky, and I'm just not bullish on him. The Detroit Lions, they have a couple good games in a row. They beat Green Bay, for example, and then they lose to Seattle by multiple scores. Green Bay has a really tough schedule coming up, starting with, you know, actually last week with the Rams and now with New England. So they don't have a cakewalk moving forward. So I do think that the path is there for the Vikings to win the division. And I think, you know, their defense is not going to be as good as they were a season ago, but they're going to be good enough that if Kirk Cousins can play as well as he's played so far this year, it should still be the front runner for the division.
I like it. I like it, Luke. Because you know, it's that time of year and people keep talking about it. And are there any trades out there? Let's say the Vikings could figure out a way to make the money work. Are there any trades out there, any players out there that the Vikings could add to the team that would make a difference for them on this run? Like, we know everyone, I guess every guard name that anyone has ever heard of, people want to add to the team.
Reasonably available players.
Yeah.
Patrick Peterson's first one comes to mind. Doesn't sound like that's happening, but that would be insane.
That would have been amazing.
That would be nuts. God, who else is even out there?
We don't need Patrick Peterson. We have Trey Waynes.
Hey, he's having a nice year.
That is correct.
And Holton Hill had a nice night.
He did.
Had like an 82 grade or something.
And Trey Waynes is now our best cornerback per
that
Vikings
might really
Twitter.
Be true. God, who else is out there? Screw it. I'd trade for Lev Bell. YOLO.
Oh, boy.
I would.
He's a good slot receiver.
There we go. Lev Bell.
Can I interject?
Yeah, hop in.
The Kirk Cousins era in Minnesota is 3 years long. I would not give up any capital this year to make, because I think offensive line is one of the most overrated things in football. And so like they're a great passing game, even with an offensive line that includes Jason and me at two guards. So, but I think the Vikings really do need to start developing some depth on their team, and they did a good job in this draft, but they could use another full draft of it. And I think like surrendering a draft pick at this point in time for kind of a rental player would be a mistake.
I think to make any trades work, you'd have to be getting rid of like an expensive veteran to like move the money anyways, right? Like you'd have to trade like Anthony Barr for someone.
Yeah, and the
best part of it is that like because at this point it's just anyone that we've ever heard of is who people want to add to the team, but like you know guys like Osemele are grading way worse than our most hated line lineman Tom Compton, who very well might be our highest graded lineman season to date or close to it.
And Sheldon Rankins ate Isadora's lunch last night.
Oh my goodness. Oh my goodness. We had Sheldon Rankins looking like Aaron Donald yesterday. Like that was crazy. Where he just bench pressed elf line into the back. Like just disrespectful.
That was disgusting. And just he did the same thing to Isadora too.
He
was like unstoppable.
Well, I mean with Isadora, I feel like he just kind of pushed him out of the way. Just rudely like slapped him out of the way.
Isadora did have a good run blocking grade, which I think is pretty nice, but like he had this crater pass blocking game. O'Neal got beat up real bad by Cam Jordan. Rough day for a couple of the young guys.
And I know you did it in the off season and we haven't talked about it. So I'm going to guess you probably, I don't know if you've done it yet, but Eric from like, I know you guys had looked at kind of like quantifying like a coaching effect. Is that something that you guys look at in season at all?
We do actually. So
looking at this thing here, and sure, there are some good players there, but the fact that both New Orleans tackles, both you know of the Rams tackles, are very high in your grades. I think both of the guards for the Rams are also very high in your grades. Like, are we seeing something that's happening there from like a coaching or scheme perspective that's really putting those guys in more favorable situations? And is any of that something that we can copy for our team to help our tackles and guards out in any way, shape, or form? Or is it just those players are awesome and they are just you know, also in a scheme that is helping them out?
Yes. So I think that like the fact that, you know, Andrew Whitworth is like, you know, is giving up like one sack this year is part him being awesome and part the Rams just doing such a great job. And I do think that the Vikings offensive line not being very good is part talent and then part coaching. So like, I don't know, like if you, we watch the Patriots right now, like there's no one on that offensive line that's particularly good in terms of like raw talent, but they seem to get it done. Right, they got rid of Soldier. Soldier goes to the Giants. He's been basically a disaster so far. So I do think that like there's something certainly you can do in terms of you know being better than you know better than the sum of the parts along the offensive line. And to me, right now with the receivers that the Vikings have, it really hasn't necessarily been necessary for that to occur even, right? Because they've just been so good at the receiver position. So I don't know. I think scheming more quick stuff to Diggs and Thielen would help a lot. If you're asking about John DeFilippo as a coach, he is in the lower five in the NFL right now in terms of offensive coaches going into week eight. I'm assuming that with some of the stuff that transpired Sunday night, probably similar. So he has not looked good so far. Mike Zimmer continues to be great.
Okay. Well, it's always nice when the numbers align with your anecdotal feelings about how things are going. Because, Luke, from your perspective, like what is it that you might want to see a little bit differently from the Vikings offense? Because it does feel like they get stagnant at times, and that with the players that we have, I'm not gonna lie. I'm a bit of shock that the Vikings offense that we have this year with the receivers that we have and the quarterback that we have is less explosive than the Vikings offense that we had with both Case Keenum and Sam Bradford. Like that's something that I would not have put money on going into this season.
Yeah, I think in terms of like the play calling, at least just on the point of coaching, I think one of the biggest like gripes that I have is the directional running, because like they've run up the middle a whole lot and I just don't feel like that's the way to gain yards. Especially they had Dalvin Cook running up the middle and he's like an outside zone running back. which is insane to me. And I think there's a little bit of a situational issue. I think they pass in short yardage situations way too often, which I know that like the analytics is like all about run hate, but the analytics also says that running on in short yardage situations, third and one, fourth and one, stuff like that, running certain plays, like, you know, power certain off tackle.
Spreading the defense out.
Yeah, spread the defense out, then run power. That, like, always works, or QB sneak always works. And we even saw it last night. We saw them, I think they attempted, like, a 15-yard pass on fourth and one. I think part of that was Cousins misread that play really bad, and he actually had Kyle Rudolph wide open for an actual touchdown, but that's a different thing. But, like, I think some of those lessons, like, haven't quite been learned yet. But, like, I'm proud of them for going forward on more fourth downs. We're getting there. But there's just some things that, like, they just haven't learned.
Can we pause for a second and talk about Kyle Rudolph, by the way? Like, what is – like, is he just not going to be productive this year? How does that work?
I'm not allowed to talk about Kyle Rudolph.
I didn't even realize something was different about him. Is he having a different year than he usually does? I have no idea.
Let's look him up here. What's going on with Kyle Rudolph? I mean, the last that I heard about Kyle Rudolph was that he was
amazing.
He was top 10 in the league for yards after catch at the tight end. Yeah, he was killing it with the yak. That no longer appears to be the case, though.
Making people want a yak? No.
Go over here. Where is it? Where? Oh my goodness, this is not good. Is he not on this front, the first page?
Oh, no.
The limbs have been owned.
Oh, no. Maybe I need to set my minimum targets.
27th in the league in yards per route run? Yeah, that tracks.
Oh, my. Oh, no, we need to give him some more targets. Let's go with people with a minimum of 20 targets. There we go. He's tied for 14th. With 4.8 yak yards per reception.
Interesting.
He's right. He's tied with Nick Vinette, and actually one spot by 0.1 ahead of Jordan Reed.
Nick Vinette is generational talent at the
Also, don't tell Miles that that Rudolph is has more yak per reception than Trey Burton.
Oh, no.
Ooh. Yeah.
From a yards per route run perspective, he's been on a steady decline since 2016.
And 2011?
In 2016, I didn't go that far back. I'm too lazy. But in 2016, he had 1.56 yards per route run, which is decent, ranked 19.
Sorry.
And he's ranked like 27th, 28th since then. So, and I think that might actually be, he might actually be like the 27th or 28th best tight end in the league.
I feel like his yards per reception has been 10, like, every year of his career. Exactly, 9.8 for his career. He's at 10 right now. He's, like, either 9 or 10 every year in his career. Like, he's the exact same dude all the time, just sometimes he gets more volume than other times.
I mean, 2016 was just, like, his best volume year, right?
Yeah, but I don't think anything about him was any different. He just got some more passes. Like Luke said, like, yards per out run weren't great. He just
it was like 19th. It was fine.
He's fine. It's fine. The top five tight end in the league talk has calmed down just a little bit.
Well, we do have a top five tight end. It's just not Kyle Rudolph.
Yeah, you're right. You're right.
You guys are out of control.
They need to get him more involved. More involved.
Oh gosh.
Oh, man.
Offensive pass interference, like it's their job tonight.
Oh, yeah. What did you have on the second half?
A white wide receiver just can't get a break tonight for the pass.
I don't have the game on. I just unless
you played in the NSIC, we're just not giving you
any love.
Did you know that Thielen played in the NSIC?
I was not aware. I was not aware of that fact. That he also was an undrafted player.
Not only undrafted, but was not invited to he had to like go to a tryout.
My goodness.
Brady just on the money to your guy Josh Gordon.
Yeah, Brady right now, and I'm rerunning my numbers since Luke helped me find a Luke and Yinka both immediately called out the same thing that made me go back and look at my spreadsheet. They're like, what is Oakland and Dallas doing there? And I was like, that is a good question. Let me go. Oh, I did not lock that cell in the formula.
We did a so Peter King does his like football morning in America thing, and we like we supply him with some numbers and stuff. Amari Cooper, like John Gruden is actually like calling a pretty damn good like game for the Raiders. Amari Cooper is like open like 15% more than he was a season ago. So like I think they're executing the tank extremely well, because like they were up like 8 on the Indianapolis Colts and really made it look like they were trying to win, and then Colts like dump trucked them at the end. It was great.
Yeah, Marlon Mack was playing off my fantasy team
really well.
You got to give them just enough hope before you go and just lose all your games.
You can't just like go out there 0-6 Vikings on it. You have to try.
That was the beauty of the Cleveland Browns over those, you know, first few years of Hugh, which was they just find really heart-wrenching ways to make their fans think they were going to win before losing in some ridiculously stupid manner.
I call it Hughesing, but
oh my goodness. Saxy Prince, was there anything else we needed to talk about? Because I know before you were upset that we were like getting all the takes, you know, in the group message and not, you know, coming on to record. Did we cover everything we were supposed to cover?
Yeah, I mean, I think so. I know that we had talked a little bit as far as we got into it a little bit on the pod, but like, you know, just QB pressures and how unstable of a metric it is, but how it's kind of like over the last couple of years been a relatively stable measure because of, you know, the two guys in which these quarterbacks have been passing to, Stephon Diggs and Adam Thielen. So, I mean, it's, sometimes we just like need to give some of these stats a little bit of context, you know, before we're spitting out there, because we're saying like, oh, Kirk Cousins doing fantastic under pressure. It's like, well, you know, he is throwing to probably the most, you know, throw accuracy erasing type wide receivers in the league right now. So, I mean, even with the pressure race that he's receiving, and, you know, not to say that he hasn't been playing well under pressure, it's just that, you know, do we continue to give him that much credit and not give credit to guys like Stephon Diggs and Adam Thielen, who are playing well above what most of the wide receiver duos in the league are playing?
Well, I think that's the huge thing, right? Like, that's why it's not a quarterback. That's why it's not a metric necessarily the quarterback owns, right? Because if you look at, you know, say, for example, if you're a really good offensive coordinator, the plays that your quarterback takes pressure on might, you know, be on, you know, where you entice a blitz or something like that, and your hot receivers are wide open. Whereas some guys, if you play for Mike McCoy and you're under pressure, you got no options, right? So, and then pressure comes in all shapes and sizes, and supporting casts come in all shapes and sizes. And hence, like, when a quarterback's under pressure, you know, you ascertain less about them than you would like when they're clean, right? So I think that makes a ton of sense. And yeah, so that's why, you know, when you look at Cousins, like, you can say, I think pretty confidently that, you know, at least for this season, you might see his pressure numbers remain the same.
Yeah, I'm looking at it now. A little bit too. And you got Fitzmagic there, number two under pressure when we're looking at passer rating.
Mm-hmm. And that's the same thing. Dude, like, I'm like, people in Minnesota might like think that this is blaspheme, but the Tampa Bay supporting cast offensively is better than the Vikings.
Oh, that makes sense. Yep. You got Mike Evans and DeSean Jackson. Who are we to be mad?
Well, and Chris Godwin and
OJ Howard. OJ Howard is twice the tight end that Kyle Rudolph.
And both their tight ends are better than Kyle Rudolph. Yeah. So,
no, yeah, I
so can like, see
that. That's not even so, like that hot.
And I actually really like Jameis Winston as a football player. So it sucks to see him not succeed right now. But like, you know, Winston over the last like 2 years has the highest percentage of dropbacks that are positively graded. He just has such a negative, you know, his negatives are so bad that it's like really hard to buy into him. So like, to me, that's like the tricky part of, you know, Tampa Bay is like, you put in Fitzpatrick and he's probably going to do okay. and we'll never probably see, you know, a guy like Winston's, you know, opportunity to emerge fully take shape.
Yeah, and Eric, before we get out of here, because and Yanka, thank you for bringing up the play under pressure. I guess it was last week or maybe 2 weeks ago at this point when, you know, people lost their mind over the possibility that maybe somebody was saying Kirk Cousins wasn't necessarily like, you know, an elite or top three quarterback in the league. And one of the things that you brought up at that point was the instability of play under pressure, but you brought in a baseball analogy that I wanted you to, I guess, to follow up on a little bit and really explain kind of what it was that you meant when you were talking about, you know, pressure and, you know, why we fade, you know, the guy who performed really well under pressure from one season to the next and what that might mean.
Yeah. So like in baseball, you know, they would look at, you know, they have, you know, I think the big three outcomes, which are strikeouts, walks, and home runs. And essentially, like, you know, to the degree that you can control for ballpark, home run, like those three things the pitchers control. And what they found is that if you're trying to project teams and players and pitchers from one season to the next, those are the things you want to look at. Batting average on balls in play, which is called BABIP, is, you know, there's obviously something to it because, you know, if you're a guy that consistently gives up line drives, you're going to, you know, you're going to struggle. However, you know, that metric is extremely unstable. As you can imagine, like there are pitchers who get like bad luck, and baseball is such this weird thing where they put percentages as, you know, 10. So like a guy that hits 320 one year versus a guy that hits 300, that's 2%, but we think about it as 20%, which it really isn't. So like BABIP is one of those things that you fade, right? So if a guy, you know, if a guy like has a really high batting average on balls in play, you can basically say it's because of luck. Same thing with a pitcher. Quarterback, I think it's the same thing. Like if you're trying to project quarterback performance forward, you look at how they do in clean, you look at how they do without play action, and you basically, if you assign them league average or maybe like offensive adjusted league average on pressure and play action passes, you'll probably do a better job projecting them moving forward. And we've seen that than if you actually took their ability, you know, what they've done historically, under pressure or with play action. That's what people have seen in baseball too. It's like you just give a pitcher basically a league average BABIP and you pretty much do a better job of projecting them forward than, like, you know, seeing if they have any signal on how they do in batting average on balls in play.
And I'd just add that if you do that with Cousins, you get like the ninth or 10th best quarterback in the league, which is pretty good.
Which is funny because that's where my stuff says that, you know,
yes,
he's coming in right now. He's about the 10th best quarterback in the league relative to a supporting cast.
Like everything that you want to be looking at for exactly all of those reasons that you just mentioned, Eric, pretty much puts Kirk Cousins in the same place, ninth or 10th. So when people are like, is he elite or is he a top three quarterback? That's when you kind of scoff at it. But that doesn't mean you're like, he's bottom, you know, five or anything like that. You're not like a hater. He's ninth or 10th.
He's comfortably at the top of tier three.
The Kirk Cousins thing is a really nice barometer for how much nuance you're willing to accept as a football fan, because Kirk Cousins is simultaneously overpaid and good.
Yes.
Yeah, wow.
He's overpaid and good, but he's not great unless you're talking fantasy football, which is something different.
That's in the offseason has paid off.
I mean, like, and so I had an interaction with a prominent fantasy football mind, and like he was very much on the pro Cousins bandwagon, and I was, you know, I don't play fantasy all that much, but I even said like, hey, these are my reasons for not liking Cousins here, but at the same time I can tell you that I own him in like four of my leagues, you know, for the reasons you're talking about. And like, if you're playing fantasy football, Cousins is a great get. If you're playing, you know, if you're the Vikings, Kirk Cousins over Case Keenum, if money was independent, is a great get, right? If you add in money, though, it becomes a little gray. And that's the point, right? That's what we're saying. None of us, I think Kirk is garbage or he's shouldn't belong on an NFL team, or he's not a brilliant businessman, honestly. Like, let's be real. But the thing that people need to realize is that I think, and that's my personal opinion, is that he is simultaneously a good quarterback who is overpaid.
Yeah, and my position is that saying Kirk Cousins is a top 10 quarterback should not be seen as a slight on Kirk Cousins.
Yeah, he's like probably top 10.
Yeah.
Top 5 is a bit of a stretch. That's okay.
That's like fine.
Aaron Rodgers and Drew Brees are in this league. It's okay to not be as good as them.
Yeah, he's not as good as but you know, that was the day that we're having today on Vikings Twitter where it was compare Kirk Cousins and Aaron Rodgers raw stats day on Vikings Twitter.
Well, Aaron Rodgers, by raw stats, Aaron Rodgers and Andy Dalton have been about the same quarterback for the last 3 years.
I mean, yeah, that makes sense.
I'm all in on that bit. Aaron Rodgers, mediocre quarterback.
Yeah, he's not good. Not good at all. Not good. Well, all
Aaron
right.
Rodgers, Andy Dalton, interchangeable.
And which is to say, you know, I've come around because there was a point in time where I thought that Kirk Cousins and Andy Dalton were like the exact same quarterback. And now, having looked at things here, I think that Kirk Cousins is better than Andy Dalton.
But at the same time though, right? Andy Dalton's having a really nice year.
Yeah, this is true.
For my hometown Bengals. I mean, like, Andy Dalton is capable of winning a 37-34 game where the other team's offense plays out of their mind. So in that respect, like, you know what I mean?
Yeah, they're in the same tier for sure. Where like, for if, sure. Like in 2015, you saw if you put everything that Andy Dalton needs around him, he can play like an MVP level player. Like,
correct.
You have a healthy Tyler Eifert, AJ Green. I think it was that Marvin Jones? Was he still there then? I think that was the Marvin Jones year and a good offensive line.
Mohamed Sanu, Tyler, yeah, an offensive line that's good. I think that's the really been the difference too for the Bengals this year. Not to get too far into the weeds, but like their offensive line is not a complete disaster anymore. Like it was when they, you know, they drafted high guys at tackle and they both flopped. And that's why they struggled for a few years because they felt that they had to move on from Whitworth.
Hey, speaking of the 2015 Bengals, how would you feel if Hugh Jackson were the OC of the 2019 Vikings?
I mean, I think John D. Filippo is a better option.
I think I agree with that. I think the league may have passed Hugh Jackson up.
I feel, yeah. I think that, you know, in week 7 of us trying to establish the run going into the fourth quarter, it might be too much. Might be too much. I don't think, yeah. No, couldn't do it.
We have to get Latavius Murray going.
We got to. Oh, yeah. Last take that, you know, I want to get everyone's opinion on. I have Saxy Prince's thoughts on it, but I'm going to start with them anyway because we're talking about running backs. But the chorus is growing louder by the week about, you know, should Dalvin even get his starting job back when he's healthy? Should Latavius be the lead back and Dalvin maybe be the change of pace back? Yanka, you know, Latavius seems to be coming into his own. He's doing well. I mean, his numbers now in terms of, you know, yards per carry are as good as Dalvin's have ever been, probably better. Should Dalvin get the job back? What are your thoughts? What should we be doing?
Give that man his job back.
Okay. That was that very definitive. Luke, what are your thoughts? Latavius, Dalvin, what should we be doing here?
Pretty sure Dalvin's like always going to be more elusive, right? But does elusivity lead to production? This is actually a question I've had for a while.
No.
Yeah, so running back or offensive success in the running game is very, very minutely associated with the play of the back.
Okay, but like insofar as backs go, is
right. If you control for everything, you'd rather have a more elusive guy than have another guy. Although I will say, I'm a fan of Latavius Murray as a human, like from everything that my friend Matthew Collar has told me, and like he's a person I root for, and I think similarly of Dalvin Cook, but I think more of Murray because he just seems like just a sweet guy. Murray has done a very good job of, and we haven't seen Dalvin play in like 2 years, so I honestly don't know if this is the case, but Murray doesn't seem to ever put the Vikings in bad situations.
Yeah, I will say, so in about a third as many attempts, or more like half as many attempts, Dalvin Cook still has more forced missed tackles than
yes.
Latavius Murray on the season.
And out of the backfield, I'm assuming he, you know, he's a good receiver and everything. Like, it, and, but I don't know. The thing is that the running game matters so little in the NFL that, like, I think it's just a discussion. Like, it's for old time people to talk about, I guess.
It really
like,
doesn't matter.
We should have Flip on here. We should have Flip on here to talk about the sanctity of football and, like, the running game.
Now, I feel like Flip would be okay without the running game. Maybe we get a. I got yelled at by David's buddy Drew for talking about play action and running, how well you run the ball not mattering for how
I love
well
my colleague George's tweet that like the Vikings ran play action without running the ball first in the game and how that's a felony.
But David came, he's like, yeah, when we grew up watching football, it was a different thing and it's difficult to adjust. But like people were really upset with me for the take that, you know, you don't have to be able to run the ball for play action to work because the linebackers aren't reacting.
The linebackers are trained from
stats.
The day that they're the first day that they put on pads to follow play action fakes. Right. So.
Yeah, they should.
That's the world we live in. God help us all.
Yeah, they should stop doing that. But anywho, gentlemen, this has been fun. We've covered all of the things that we wanted to. We've, you know, Eric came in and had positivity and hope for us going forward, backed by math and anecdote, but mostly math, which feels good. Has us winning the NFC North, which is a beautiful thing. Kirk Cousins is a top 10 quarterback. Yinka didn't say anything racist. It's a great show all around, gentlemen.
I think that's the real win here, fellas. Like,
yeah, that is really the win.
If we can get through a show where I'm not or tweeting out anything racist, I think we, you know, we need to count our blessings.
Well, so. I had to bring our two white friends on the show so people could see that you weren't actually.
Yeah, I was on the lookout for it because God knows that's the real problem we have to solve in this country is.
Racism against players like Adam Thielen and maybe Jordy Nelson.
That is true. Adam Thielen. I actually saw a thing on Instagram where it looks like somebody created a narrative that people say Adam Thielen is not fast. So they could then counter this narrative with, you know, a meme showing Adam Thielen's 40 time. And I was like, I don't know that anyone has ever said Adam Thielen is not fast.
Guys, what this world needs is more people advocating for white folks.
I mean, yes.
There's such a shortage. You know,
nobody's standing up for the poor ones.
No one. Listen, growing up in Detroit Lakes, it's got to be hard. Like,
it has Detroit in the name. Detroit is in the name, so it's got to be tough.
Somebody's got it. Like, if you're not going to advocate for Adam Thielen, who is, you know?
Oh, all right. Well, with that note, I'm going to go ahead and just shut this thing down before one of us gets ourselves in trouble. Gentlemen, thanks for coming on. Listeners, thank you for sticking with us. And send all of your angry messages, as always, to @SaxyPrince on Twitter.
My DMs are always open.
Send your racist DMs to me.
Sweet. All right, y'all. Have a good one.